This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of World Wide Way, the international LGBT news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
It is indeed World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. In the studio tonight, I have the pleasure of Damien.
Why, thank you, Matt.
Paul.
Hello, Matt.
And myself, Matt. Now, perched on the Mediterranean Sea, Tunisia is the only democracy in the Arab world. But despite creating a progressive constitution after their 2010 revolution, some minorities like the LGBT community still struggle for basic acceptance.
In a country where same-sex relations are illegal, how do you get an LGBT group registered by the government?
If you then speak out against the government, how precarious is that registration?
And what do you do when the government tries to shut your group down? To hear the struggles of LGBTI people in Tunisia, tonight we speak with Anna Goulali, Human Rights Watch based in Tunisia. And here's a taste of what we've got coming up tonight.
I think gays and lesbians in Tunisia, they can live their lives, but they are subjected all the time to the arbitrariness of state security and the arbitrariness of police forces enforcing a medieval law, such as the law that criminalizes same-sex relations.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Kicking off in the Pacific of Fiji, where the Methodist Church, in fact, the leader of the Methodist Church, Reverend Tevita Banivanua, has spoken in support of gays and lesbians, inviting them to be a part of church activities and saying that their various contributions are accepted by the church. He went on to insist that his congregation must continue to reflect on the need to practice unconditional love and compassion towards all, including those who have different values. Now, this is super significant because it was only just a matter of weeks ago before Christmas that the Prime Minister of Fiji basically said that anybody who was gay and lesbian could go and live in Iceland. A one-way ticket. So for the local churches to be speaking out, I think this is
quite a turnaround.
His views are actually also shared by the Anglican Church, where a leading bishop there has said that the church appreciates the various contributions of all people within the church and singled out lesbian women as being valued members of the congregations of the Anglican Church there.
Now, I never thought I'd actually say this, but the church seems to be taking the lead. You know, they're coming out and saying such progressive things, such as stigma and discrimination could only be vanquished by the practice of unconditional love. So they're actually leading the change, the church. Did I say that, Matt?
Which is impressive on so many levels. There is a little caveat. They aren't going as far as saying that same-sex marriage should be sanctioned. So we're not quite jumping into the pool.
Yes, they still maintain that marriage is a sacred covenant between a man and a woman and not two of the same sex. So, you know, I think it's still progress.
And interestingly, a church leader in Greece, the Greek Orthodox Church, a bishop has spoken up again saying that gay people are God's children, so don't reject them. So some interesting things coming out of religious leaders.
Who'd have thunk it? Over to Northern Ireland, which is still fighting for same-sex marriage. Well, cast your mind back to, I think it was last year, when there was a bit of an incident where somebody wanted to get a cake baked at a bakery and wanted to have a particular LGBTI slogan put on the cake, and the bakery basically refused to do that. So a bit of a follow-up now. There's been a bit of a legal a rigmarole going
on. Throwing.
A little bit, yes. So the anti-gay bakery is now preparing to argue that they did what they did in terms of freedom of expression. Mm. So they're saying that their freedom of expression was violated because it was against their views, and they were essentially having to express a view that's not theirs.
How expressive is a cake?
Well, you know, that's I guess for the courts to decide.
The case is actually going before the Court of Appeal next month. And it's a leading human rights lawyer has joined the fight as well. So it's going to get a bit juicy there up in Northern Ireland.
It is.
Further south in the Republic of Ireland, an Irish archbishop has defended the Anglican decision to punish a pro-gay church. So this is the Anglican Communion, which is the global conglomerate of all churches headed by the Archbishop of Canterbury.
So it's the big festival of bishops coming to town to talk about all things policy.
They voted overwhelmingly to sanction a US church that affirms same-sex marriage.
So one of the very few churches that has spoken up in support of same-sex marriage, and they have slapped them down.
The church has welcomed gay members for a number of years and even has appointed a gay bishop.
The archbishop has defended this decision, saying that the language of the primates gathering and the communique was not about sanctions, but rather wanting to walk together and create a safe distance in order to do so over the coming years. I don't know what that means.
Well, I mean, I'm calling bullshit because basically what they said in more certain terms, the statement they put out was that for a period of 3 years, the Episcopal Church, so that's the one in the US, no longer represents us on a on either the ecumenical or the interfaith bodies and should not be appointed or elected to an internal standing committee. And that while participating in the internal bodies of the Anglican Communion, they will not take part in decision-making on any issues pertaining to doctrine or polity. So in other words, they're saying, you know, we're going to keep you on the border. We're not going to let you voice your opinion anymore.
Look, I think I need some good news. Across in Taiwan, Taiwan has elected a new president. You couldn't miss that in our news cycle. But this president is not only the first female elected president of Taiwan, but she supports the rights of LGBT people. She actually posted a video on Chinese Valentine's Day last year, which featured three same-sex couples alongside straight ones. And we will be watching Taiwan with glee.
Woohoo! And in brief, over to Canada, a university establishes the world's first chair of transgender studies.
The FAA, FAF, FIFA.
FIFA. Thank you. Soccer people.
I should know that. I come from that country. they have sanctioned five countries for insulting and discriminatory chants that have been made by their soccer spectators.
And in Lebanon, a judge has ruled that a trans man can legally change his gender. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, World Wide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
We are supporting the Tunisian group that is fighting for the rights in Tunisia and has been suspended, which is our interview tonight. So let's have a look at some fun, fast facts about Tunisia.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
Tunisia is a country on the Mediterranean in northern Africa. It's got a good mix with good cultural ties with the Middle East. So that whole section of the world is usually referred to as Middle East and North Africa.
Are you alluding then to the influence that it may have of the region?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting mix because if you put them in the African bucket, it probably isn't as much of a cultural mix. A lot of the things to do with the culture and, you know, religion and things are based on Middle Eastern influences.
Although it is the birthplace, supposedly the birthplace of the Arab Revolution that we had in 2010, 2011.
And as we mentioned before, it's the only, currently only democracy in the Arab world. Not well. That's the good news.
that's where it starts going down.
So for LGBT people, both male and female same-sex sexual activity is in fact illegal. It's under the old sodomy laws. Even though this is a very French-influenced area, they've got sodomy laws dating back to 1913, and you can be put in prison for up to 3 years for acts of sodomy between consenting adults.
Cross-dressing, although not expressly illegal, still gets caught under the Penal Code, Article 226. Outrages against public decency.
Outrageous. Well, it depends what you're wearing, doesn't it?
And then it's no surprise that with regards to marriage, it is defined as a union between a man and a woman in Tunisia. Same-sex marriage or the more limited civil unions are not legally recognised in Tunisia.
I wonder if they had John Howard advising them on that law. The constitutional laws, Article 1 of the Constitution, they have an official religion. So Islam is the official religion and it's practised by 98% of the population. In terms of human rights and LGBT rights, now, so they had this revolution in 2010-2011 and basically, as soon as that revolution came in, there was this whole burst of there was a burst of human rights activity that went on. One of the things that happened was the country's LGBT community came up with the very first magazine called Gay Day. Was launched, and the government has since tolerated this, even though some of the statements they make about LGBT rights tend to be quite negative.
Yeah, because they actually do have a Minister for Human Rights, so that sounds good.
But not all humans.
Well, no, because the Minister for Human Rights, this is their job. This is what they are on public record as saying.
Samir Dalou, his name is.
Samir, our good friend Samir, said, "Freedom of speech has its limits. Homosexuality is perversion, and gay people need to be treated medically."
Yeah. Yeah, he then went on a year later when the United Nations Human Rights Committee brought down a recommendation that the country decriminalise same-sex sexual acts. He said, "The concept of sexual orientation is specific to the West and is therefore overridden by Tunisian law." So they have a little way to go there, I would say. One thing that does keep propping up here in Tunisia is to do with male prostitution, where a number of tourists visiting Tunisia have employed the services of what they believe was prostitutes, but were then either imprisoned, charged by police, entrapped, or extorted. So it's something to be very careful of there.
So heads up if you're travelling to Tunisia.
Boa noite. This is David from Brazil, listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
We are indeed in Tunisia tonight, and in Tunisia, to operate legally as an association, you need to be registered with the government. And things seem to be going well for SHAMS. SHAMS is the first group fighting for the human rights of sexual minorities after they were, in fact, allowed to register last year. But that all changed when, just after New Year, a few weeks ago, SHAMS was advised that their group would be suspended due to a complaint of an administrative nature filed by the government's Secretary General.
Now, that does sound like a sham.
Indeed. Amna Goulali works with Human Rights Watch in Tunisia, and we asked her to start telling us a bit about the organisation SHAMS and what they do.
SHAMS is an association created in 2015 in order to fight for the decriminalisation of gay and homosexual relations. They fight for equality and non-discrimination in Tunisia and for the protection of sexual minorities from violence.
Now, you did mention there that same-sex relations are, in fact, illegal. Is that, therefore, a problem to have a group like SHAMS that advocates for change in that law?
Yes, same-sex relations in Tunisia are considered as criminal and can entail a prison sentence of 3 years. But the Tunisian constitution, which was adopted in January 2014, is a progressive constitution, and it should prevail over the law. So the creation of TEMS as an association that defends sexual minority rights should be considered as fully legal and fully in compliance with Tunisian constitution. This constitution also mandates that there shouldn't be any discrimination on the basis of religion, of sex, of gender, etc., and that there is an equality before the law for all Tunisian citizens. There is also a right to privacy, which is enshrined in the constitution. All of this should be considered as, you know, a very good framework for dropping the criminalization of same-sex relations in Tunisia.
So, yes, it does actually sound good, but Shams has actually been suspended by the government. Their ability to operate has been suspended. On what grounds has the government done that?
The government has requested, as per Tunisian law on association, the judiciary to suspend Shams Association for a period of 30 days. And then there will be, basically, and following the law, there could be a dissolution of the association. The arguments of the government seem very serious and not to be really strong. They say that they have changed their objective, which is stated in the statute, from defense of sexual minority rights to the defense of gays and homosexuals in Tunisia. And they say that they don't have their legal registration, which is factually wrong.
What, therefore, is Shams as a group able to do? How do they challenge that ruling?
Shams has challenged the decision to suspend its activities before the administrative tribunal, and they are now still awaiting a decision on this challenge.
Salut tous mes belles gays et mes beaux lesos. C'est Matthew Mitchum, et vous écoutez à Joy 94.9.
This is Scott from the Equality Network Scotland on the World Wide Web.
I had a message in off Facebook. Thanks, Pete. Pete has actually, he was the one who passed on that story from Greece, the Greek Orthodox bishop speaking out in support of LGBT people. We had quite a little flurry on the weekend too of likes and things to do with our posts from Midsummer. We were down there on the Joy stall at Midsummer saying hello to the peeps.
We were. Thank you to everyone that came down to say hi. We appreciated seeing you and we appreciate your support.
And thank you to everybody who took out the membership on the day.
Indeed.
Now, tonight we are in Tunisia,
where some members of Shams have claimed that this move by the government to suspend their organisation is payback for them speaking out against some government policies and actions. We asked Amna if there was any basis to these claims.
Shams, as an association that defends minority sexual minority rights, has spoken up against some recent incidents, such as the imprisonment of gay men in Tunis recently. They have also criticized the use of anal examination as a proof of homosexuality, and therefore their outspoken defense of sexual minorities is seen as contrary to Tunisian, you know, like values, customs, Islamic principles, etc., and that they have therefore breached, let's say, some of the you know, like customs in Tunisia. So I think the government has decided to go after Shams and to suspend its activities in order to bend with, you know, like the popular sentiment in Tunisia against gay rights.
In suspending this group, what are the risks of them dissolving? What would that mean for LGBT people within Tunisia?
If the judiciary decides to dissolve the Shams Association, it means that they will shut down the association, that it cannot operate anymore. It means also that the sexual minorities in Tunisia will not be able anymore to assemble and to create an association that will defend their rights. It means also that there might be more attacks against the gays and the sexual minorities in Tunisia, you know, like that there will be less readiness and less possibility to challenge some of the government policies against these sexual minorities.
And what is Human Rights Watch calling on the government to do in this regard?
We are calling on the government to protect the space for associations, including associations that work on sexual minorities or minorities in general, that these associations form part of the pluralism and the democratic process in Tunisia in terms of defending the rights and freedoms of categories of people who are legitimately entitled to protection and who are citizens of this state and should therefore be considered as fully enjoying their rights. So we call on the government not to shut down this association and to respect Tunisian constitution, which grants the right to privacy and the right to equality to all people, and to respect as well international standards in this regard.
Amna, can you perhaps paint a bit of a picture for us of what life is like for somebody who is gay or lesbian within Tunisia on a daily basis?
I think gays and lesbians in Tunisia, they can live their lives, but they are subjected all the time to the arbitrariness of state security and the arbitrariness of police forces enforcing a medieval law, such as the law that criminalizes same-sex relations. They can be, you know, targeted. They can be attacked also by, not necessarily by the security forces, but by people, because there is a very strong anti-gay belief and anti-gay attitude in Tunisia towards those who are very outspokenly and clearly showing their, you know, inclination. So that's one of the things that is the most worrisome, is the fact that there can be some physical attacks also against gay people in Tunisia. This does not happen on, you know, like a regular basis, but it could happen.
Those outspoken people, is religion playing a big part in that?
Religion plays one part. It's also kind of, you know, customs and beliefs form part of the tradition. So the traditional view, the conservative view, sees the gay rights and the sexual minority rights as the contrary to Tunisian values and Tunisian customs.
Amna Gulali from Human Rights Watch speaking to us from Tunis. Thanks for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things that the gay group, the LGBT group in Tunisia, was speaking out against, Shams is the name of the group, one of the things I was speaking out against was the jailing of six Tunisian students in, or they were sentenced in December last year for same-sex sexual acts. Now, there has been an update in the past week or so where the six students have been freed after an appeals court ordered that they receive a new trial because they were given the harshest punishment available. Damien has been quite outraged in learning at what the punishment is, because it's not only just the 3 years jail that they were sentenced to for being gay. Added to that,
they were ordered not to return to their city for another 5 years after completing their sentence.
So they were banished.
They were banished, even though legally they're not sure whether they could actually give that judgment.
So the judge just sort of thought, no, I don't
I
want
don't
them around.
Like the look of these people.
Off you go.
Off you go.
It would be like sending somebody to Canberra to live or something.
Now, thankfully, the students are free after they each paid bail money equivalent to about $249.
And there has been a huge outcry from the international community about not only their arrest originally, but also the very arbitrary penalty that they've been given. They're due back in court on the 25th of February, so we'll keep an eye on that story for you as well. One piece of good news that we did sort of see, they had a little gay pride event in Tunisia, which is quite, you know, quite brave, I would actually say.
The first time ever.
First time ever, and it was staged at one of the universities. They had some rainbow umbrellas and signs and things, and one of the guys said, we had all this, and then most passers-by looked puzzled. So whether or not people sort of associate rainbow with the LGBT community there, it doesn't
well, clearly not
seem
because
to.
After explaining the significance of the rainbow flag, after one of the passers-by asked, and it was explained to them, they basically left without saying a word.
And then there were some Islamic groups and left-wing students that came in and tried to disrupt the Pride event. But, you know, look, I still tip my hat to these groups where they're in a country where it's illegal to be gay or to have same-sex relations, and they're still willing to push the barrow and challenge the laws using their own constitution to challenge their rights. It actually puts the government in a really precarious position.
Absolutely, and it's not all dark. Back in September, Justice Minister said that he supported the repeal of Tunisia's ban on consensual sex between male adults. So there's a glimmer of hope for us yet.
And we'll explore more from Tunisia in just a few moments.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Samuel from Kenya on World Wide Wave.
Tonight we're in Tunisia, and some good news, though. We spoke at AIDS 2014 with Khadija Moella. She works with the United Nations in the Middle East and North Africa, and she explains to us how and why they engage with religious leaders to help fight HIV in Tunisia. So you've actually named two influence groups that are needed to help in the fight against HIV, the media and religious leaders. Why religious leaders?
Because they are trusted much more. The study told us that they are the most trusted people, far better than politician or medical doctor or whoever. So in one hand, they have the best outreach. They can reach out to thousands of people every single Friday. They speak directly to the community, meaning that in your mosque or church, you can have everybody, all the classes, all the gender, everybody. This is very important. And for our experience working with people living with HIV, they needed to be accepted by their religious leaders. It was not important for them that the medical doctor or the president of the NGO accepted them. They badly needed really to be accepted by their religious leaders. And I can tell you, the day I had one gay person from a country being able to pray behind the religious leaders after a workshop in the same room, and both of them knew each other, it was really a success, because both of them felt they accept each other, and it was a huge achievement for me.
That must have been incredibly hard to get those two groups together. How do you get to the point where religious leaders are advocates on HIV?
Took a lot of time, of course. It took many, many, many years, because you need to build trust with them. You can never go with any type of secular discourse. You can never go with your own agenda. You have to respect them. You have to listen to them to see where do they come from, to understand exactly what is it, and then to present them with facts, but not only facts, to let them really live the experiences, speak with people living with HIV, speak with everybody, get them to have that experience. Because you know the problem with religious leaders, when they are trained, they think they know it all, simply because they know the holy text. And by allowing them to provide them with a new knowledge through the leadership methodology, they will discover there are so many other things. And also by listening to the real stories, because they have prejudices. Well, for instance, in Morocco, we had a sex worker standing up and asking forgiveness from religious leaders. And she said her story, and her husband was HIV, and then he died. She was left alone in the streets with three kids who were hungry. She was forced to sex, as an example. Really religious leaders, you know, they stood up and they told her, we beg you to forgive us, because it was our responsibility to help you. We didn't do our job. And then they want to be part of the solution, because they understood that they were part of the problem in the beginning.
There must have been some religious leaders who didn't agree, didn't participate?
In the beginning, yes, but because I started with the highest level of leadership, I want personally to meet with the Grand Imam of Al-Azhar, I want personally to meet with many, many Mufti of the Republic, and once we discussed with them, presented them with the consensus in the beginning, and everything, then they came back. The first meeting, there were 80 of them, the highest ranked, and they did sign a Cairo Declaration. It's only when they signed that declaration that it opened the door for me to go, for the whole team to be able then for many, many years to train all the other second-level religious leaders, because they got the green light from their highest authority.
That's Dr. Khadija Moella speaking about engaging religious leaders in the fight against HIV in Tunisia. She works with the United Nations in the Middle East and North Africa region. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Hola, mi nombre es Felix de Colombia. You are on Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Now, it's the new year. You might have New Year's resolutions and you might be thinking about getting involved in an LGBT organisation. Why not think about Joy? Because we've got a raft of volunteer vacancies available on our website. You can join our program committee. You can become assistant music librarian to look after the music and our cataloging and digital systems. If you speak another language, we have lots of opportunities for announcers and script writers. You can help on the desk and do the admin work that we need to keep the station running. We have on-air producers and presenter roles as well. So the place to go is joy.org.au to find out about all those opportunities.
And we're also looking for tradies, but then we're always looking for tradies.
That's just entertainment. A big thank you. It's been fascinating looking at Tunisia tonight. We do hold out hope for change there. Big thank you to Amna Gulali from Human Rights Watch based in Tunis. You can find out about their work at hrw.org.
Thanks to those who have interacted with us on Facebook. Pete, Scott, Nicola, Greg, Harvey, Doug and a heap more. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
Next week we're looking at Russia through the eyes of theatre and one of the Midsummer plays which has been modernised to look at LGBT life in Russia today. We'll catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.